Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business, where we go inside the game of football and talk more about the business side of things. And right now, both Neil and I are down at the NFL Combine in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, where it's about 30 degrees. So it's not the warmest, but it has been colder, you know, down here. And Neil, how's it going this morning?
Hey, it's good, man. I think the mayor of Indianapolis really appreciate you calling the city beautiful with the snow coming down. It's been overcast for 3 days, and it rained the first day. But you know, that's Indianapolis in February. We've all come to love that, I guess.
That's right. So a lot of stuff going on. I mean, not just, you know, there in Lucas Oil Stadium, where guys are one of the 40, and then that kind of starts to, you know, today, and people are going to be watching on NFL Network. But yesterday there was the annual NFLPA agent, you know, meeting, where basically the big topic and the only topic you talked about on your rep rumblings yesterday was the, you know, rumor, as the Maurice Smith, what we called it, to start it off. And where are you guys getting this rumor that the thing was going to go from 2% or 3% down to 2%? Liz Mullen obviously came out with an article yesterday before the agent meeting saying this was going to be a contentious thing, and I think contentious was saying it nicely. So, Neil, I mean, we've talked about it, you know, obviously yesterday, kind of what happened and different things like that. I mean, some of the, you know, people that might have, you know, not been there or not agents or, you know, but, you know, what were you hearing, and kind of, you know, kind of we'll go from there.
Well, obviously, Justin, you were in the room, so you got a front row seat for it. Essentially what happened was the first 2.5-3 hours were really pretty humdrum, but then D came in for his, I guess, what was scheduled to be a half hour kind of state of the NFLPA address. And he immediately went to questions rather than having any kind of prepared remarks. And that was probably his first mistake, because he didn't have any chance to kind of take some of the energy out of the room. And essentially, immediately, several agents kind of launched into the, you know, the line of, hey, what's the deal with this 2%? Why don't we have representation on this? What about this meeting you held in November with these 15 mega agents who kind of got to tell their side of it, but nobody else did? You know, why are there players in this room that, you know, but why don't all the players get to hear us talk about, you know, our issue? Aren't you stating our case forcefully? And it turned into a situation where agent after agent after agent lined up at the microphone, and apparently they're, in the end, there were so many that lined up that they had to actually cut it off and not give everyone a voice, because so many people were angry and, you know, essentially stomping their feet. And I wasn't in the room, and I didn't get to confirm this with Bechta personally, but I was told that Jack Bechta, who's one of the senior agents in the business, got up at one point and said, hey, look, if they cut it 2%, how many people in this room are actually going to stay in the business? And not many hands raised, but I think that was because at that point a number of people had lost interest, because everyone was just going up there and kind of haranguing D, and but he said he might. And then, of course, I think another big part of the fireworks and the dialogue was that Lorenzo Alexander, a linebacker for the Raiders, forcefully kind of restated D's position. And I think, again, I was not in the room, but having spoken to dozens of people that were, the biggest issue was that DeMaurice Smith's initial line of attack was, well, this isn't even happening. And then when that couldn't defuse that, then it was, well, there was no secret meeting. And then again, when that was obviously an untruth, then he tried to say, well, this still may not happen. And that seems horribly optimistic and probably not on track and not realistic either. So I don't think he did a lot to help his case, especially with the middle class and the smaller agents who are really, really doing a lot of work and not having a lot of money to show for it. Anytime anyone gets a 33% pay cut, I think they're going to be pretty frustrated and angry about it, and I think that was the case yesterday.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think the issue there where, you know, when the first gentleman asked the question in regards to about the 2%, you know, he was already on the defensive and going, oh, who'd you hear this from? You know, and, you know, I think that was, you know, that, and then I think everybody kind of, you know, perked up their ears and stuff like that. Well, this was just a rumor. Oh, Liz Mullen, you know, we heard it from Liz Mullen. Well, she's just a reporter, you know. And so I think, you know, it came off, you know, and Lorenzo Neal, some of the players, you know, him and Dee.
Alexander.
At times they came off somewhat combative. And, you know, and then so then obviously, you know, you're dealing with a lot of testosterone in there. So then, you know, the other agents that, you know, kind of came up there, they gave passionate, you know, things about what are the other things that they do there. You know, so I, you know, I think that was the kind of the thing was, hey, you're going to call a rumor. And then, you know, when people bring up this meeting and then, you know, you know, they say it's a secret meeting. And then, so, you know, they, you know, at probably an hour into it, they started joking, you know, Dee and Mark Levin, they kind of joked on a standpoint of saying, hey, let's embrace it. It was a secret meeting, you know, and,
right.
And you know, the thing is I just think, you know, and again, hey, if they want to, you know, go down to 2% and that's what the players want and that's what they think is good, you know, it's fine. You know, I think the only thing that in my input would have been is, hey, if you're going to have a meeting and different things like that, you can have, with the technology we have today, you could send out an email and say, hey, we're having a meeting. We've invited these 16 agents, Drew Rosenhaus, Joel Siegel, you know, down the line, in regards to these top guys that represent the majority of the players in the league. You are able to call in and listen to the conference call. It's a, you know, you won't be able to ask any questions, but you'll be able to hear it. And I think that's where, you know, maybe you would have called, you know, stopped some of the anger and the, you know, things there was, you know, at least so that, you know, different agents could hear, okay, hey, this is what the players are saying, you know. And one thing that they said is, hey, they didn't vote on it, you know, and they said, hey, if we would have taken a vote, you guys would have been at 2% for this year. So, you know, you know, obviously to me, it was the fate was sealed before it, but I think it reconfirmed, especially with a lot of the, you know, the agents kind of giving up their, you know, giving their passion, and they were all well thought out, well, you know, organized thoughts on why it should be kept at 3% and, you know, different things like that. And, you know, the other big, you know, issue during that thing was also about practice squad players. Why can't you, and, you know, commission, you know, for practice squad players and different things like that. So I think, you know, the thing was that they, you know, kind of cooked their own goose. You know, the agents there, you know, being, you know, passion, you know, about, hey, staying at, you know, at 3%. And one thing I did is looked back and said, okay, 10 years ago, what was the average salary in the NFL? And it was $225,000. So if you take 3% of $225,000, it was like $6,000. Okay, that, you know, you can do the math. It's 6,000 and some change. You now, you take what next year's $465,000 would be, you know, the base salary, and you take it down to 2%, it's $9,000. So, hey, has there been, is there a, you know, cost of living increase and stuff like that? And so, to me, you know, when I first, you know, initially got certified in 2004, you know, I guess I look at that and say, okay, hey, you know, okay, if it's 2%, similar to the same, you know, when you were calculating your ROI and different things like that, you know, you just had less money and it's going to go up another, you know, and then the next year after that will be, you know, 480. So I think that's where they're, you know, kind of at it. And I think it's it's a valid point. And obviously the players, they can make the decision on what they want to pay, you know, and you as an agent can make a decision whether you want to be in this business or not. You know, so I think, you know, to go in there and be combative as some of those agents were, I thought was a misstep, you know, on that, you know, because ultimately you can't fight City Hall. I mean, I guess that my biggest thing is, you know, I mean, hey, if some of these agents, you know, and a lot of these agents, Drew Rosenhaus is a prime example. He charges 1%. You know, I mean, that's a known fact. I'm not telling anything that's a secret. You know, so, I mean, so Drew, okay, you're a little too, I charge one and do different things there. You know, some guys, if you bring me one of your players, I charge 0%. You know, I'll waive your commission.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I think that's the thing where, you know, hey, some of these bigger agents are already to that. So, you know, they're okay with that. You know, so I think that's why you didn't see any of the big, you know, quote unquote big time agents get up there and make a statement, you know, and there were, mm-hmm. you know, big agents, the Drew Rosenhaus, the Joel Siegels, the David Dunns in that meeting. You know, now if they stepped out, you know, during it somewhat, I don't know, but I know that they all were in there before it all kind of, you know, before it all kicked off there. So I think that, you know, that's the standpoint where, you know, I was at. It was like, okay, hey, you know, guys, hey, we've got a choice. We all can be, you know, in this business. And if they want to change the rules, they're, you know, they hold all the cards, you know, and so if they want to change it to 2%, they're going to change it to 2%. Now you have a decision whether I'm going to, you know, you're going to continue to be on it or not. You know, and, you know, and again, I know that, hey, if agents go to the business, it hurts your livelihood, and I hope they don't. And I hope, you know, but at the end of the day, everybody's going to make their own, you know, business decisions based on the information that they have available at the time.
That's right. Well, you know, Jason, I don't disagree with anything you said. You said that a couple things to add. Number one, you're right. I think that, probably the number of agents that were passionate and frustrated and angry at D and the five players that were on that panel seeing all that, they probably sealed their fate. You know, obviously there's not going to be a lot of reason for players to go back and say, those seem like good guys. Let's keep it at 3%. So you're probably right there. I think it's definitely a fait accompli now. But on the other hand, I think there's been a inflation of expectations of service over the last, really maybe three to five years. I mean, we always talk about in the business the sense of entitlement the players have. And, you know, I was talking yesterday before the agent meeting, the seminar started, I was talking to a couple agents, and one of them was talking about how, well, you know, just, gosh, a couple years ago I had a player that called me and said, hey, I don't know how to book a flight. What he really was saying is, I want you to book my flight. It wasn't that he couldn't get on Southwest.com or whatever. It was that he didn't want to, you know. And agent Chris Kelly from Philadelphia made the point, you're calling us contract advisors. It's far more than that what we do now. I mean, we've become a total concierge service for every one of our clients. The work never really ends. So, yes, you know, we maybe, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, FLPA gets to decide how much they get to bill, but it's not reasonable to think, hey, we're just guys sitting over in a corner collecting a fee for, you know, 3 to 4 years over the life of contract where we haven't done any work for 4 years. That's, I mean, especially, again, for the middle-class agent and the small agent, that's not true at all. And, Justin, I know how hard you work for your clients. It never really ends. I mean, you can't really ever turn your phone off. So that's one point that I think was important. The other thing I'll say is, again, I talked to dozens of agents when I came out of the meeting. I've talked to dozens of them since then, you know, all afternoon and even into the evening. It was the only thing they wanted to talk about. Here are the five things that I think they really were upset about. Number one, D started off by being disingenuous. I don't want to call him a liar, but he kind of tried to run away from the conversation initially. That goes for the meeting as well. He kind of tried to deny or paper over the fact that, you know, they'd had this meeting in November. The truth is that they did. And if it wasn't secret, then maybe exclusive was the thing that people objected to the most. I mean, they didn't feel like they had a voice in that room. Now, again, I know that there were agents that were in that room, that were in that meeting in November, who were passionate about defending 3%. Joel Siegel was one. Adisa Bakari was one. I'm sure there's several others that I know of that I can't remember right now. But the bottom line is these middle class and these smaller agents weren't represented there. And I think that's what they really objected to. Number two, and again, you were there, Justin, so you can agree or disagree with me. It seemed like D was not fluent with what's on an SRA. He initially tried to say, oh, well, maybe we could break in and we could just put different levels, you know, 3%, 2%, 1% with boxes they could check. Well, that's already on the SRAs, and Levin had to tell him that. And that was not something that went over real well, with the middle class and smaller agents who were, you know, living every day with having to face maybe my guy who doesn't want 2-3%, maybe wants 2% or even 1%, and here's a guy that's barely going to get into a camp. So him not even knowing that was on there, I thought was, again, something that could have been a little bit more polished and probably would have made him look a little bit more like he was a man of the people. Number three, again, not only was there no representation at that meeting in November, there's been no communication of what happened. I mean, I know I wrote a rather lengthy article on it sometime back in November, but there hasn't been anything from the NFLPA, and I think it was Jill Baxter-McBride, the agent, who said, you guys send us a dozen emails a day about crap we don't even care about. Why don't we get an email on that one telling us everything that took place in that meeting, you know, note for note? I mean, even a transcript of it would have been appropriate. And I don't think D had any answer for that. Number four really was kind of his attitude. I think of everyone I talked to described as condescension, smugness, arrogance to some degree, and combativeness. You know, I think he was defensive from the start, and I guess almost any of us would be in that situation. But he was never kind of a guy that was one to take a mea culpa attitude, maybe not even that, maybe that's not the right way to say it, but at least have a maybe kind of extend the hand of friendship and be conciliatory towards the agents. Instead, he was there to defend the party line, defend the players, and all those kind of things. And the fourth thing was, when all else failed, and it was clear that he, you know, had really kind of handled things poorly, his back door was, oh, well, you know, all y'all got to do is go through your clients, who then go through player reps, who, you know, who then will, of course, represent you there. Come on, man. I mean, if the NFLPA isn't going to take somewhat of a stand for the agents, even though I realize they're the NFL Players Association, not the NFL Agents Association, really, what have they done to help and represent and service these people that are paying $1,500 a year or more and expecting some level of service and some level of representation from the NFLPA? And so that's why I think everyone I talked to was really still, even hours after the meeting, pretty much up in arms. And it was hard for me to argue with them.
Yeah, it's for sure there. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. We'll see how it kind of, you know, plays out there. I think, you know, he makes a ton of, you know, valid points there. But I think, you know, positive was the day before, and that was at the ITL Inside the League seminar there, a kind of a client appreciation, something that, you know, Neil does. He was able to bring in four trainers, gentlemen from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and kind of the speaker of the night, you know, former GM Ray Farmer. And, you know, I think anybody that didn't show up to that, that's a decline of ITL. I think it's, you know, in my opinion, you know, shame on you. You should have been there. Ray Farmer, you know, had a lot of insightful things. You know, I've been in the football business and some part of it for, you know, for the past 13, you know, plus years. So to be able to kind of hear kind of what he said and kind of how he, you know, was, and he didn't pull any punches. The only thing he kind of got a little irritated is with one agent when I was going to ask him about Johnny Manziel. And I think it was just, you know, I don't think it was the right form for that, but I think, you know, the first, you know, 90 minutes or, you know, 80 minutes of the 90 minute talk, I mean, it was super insightful. Great guy, very, very, you know, knowledgeable, and very willing to share that knowledge, where you don't get a lot of those people, you know, doing that there. And I think, you know, everybody in that room, you know, from what I've, you know, talked to guys and people in that room, you know, took something, you know, from it. I thought, you know, it was maybe, you know, I haven't been to all of them, you know, but, you know, to the ones I've been, I thought it was the best yet. And, you know, I think number one, hats off to you for getting that done and, you know, and bringing in a great speaker. And like we, you know, we talked about, hey, you know, I think, you know, that's what people are looking for, and that insight, you know, information, and, you know, take it away, kind of, you know, you can speak a lot more eloquently about that event and kind of what you heard and the different things that went on, you know, went on there on Wednesday night.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, of course, Justin. It was, I thought it was a great night. It was really exciting to have a guy that was running a team 2 months ago to be able to come in and answer questions in an open forum and really get to talk about kind of the nitty-gritty details of player analysis and evaluation and procuring players. How do they come in and, you know, how to work with scouts, how a GM would recommend an agent approach a scout and build a bridge with a scout and come to know them and, you know, kind of have them as a contact and all the ins and outs of the game that you're never going to read about in most forums. You know, you're never going to see anything like that on NFL Network or on Pro Football Talk, whatever you want to talk about that are more, a little more fan driven. It was fun for me. I mean, I tell everybody that, you know, anybody that shows up is pretty much a bonus. I'm always there, almost like in the, it's off my own edification anyway, either reinforcing what I already knew or learning new things that I didn't know, you know. And as you know, we had Phil Emery come in last year, and Phil had just parted ways with the Bears about a month and a half before, 2 months before, what have you. And Phil was excellent last year and really insightful and had a lot of things to say and really went into a lot of detail about the process and the various questions that we had and all those kinds of things. Ray was just like him and kind of built on that. And to me, it's exciting to have had two guys with that kind of horsepower at our last two conferences, and we hope to continue to do that. The only thing that, you know, I don't want word to get out to some of these GMs that the people that speak in my conference are, I mean, I'm friends with a lot of these guys. I don't want to think that I'm kind of like the Grim Reaper if I come around talking to them this year, if I bump into them in the hallway or anything. But Ray and Phil were both great. I think some of the highlights of what Ray said that I thought were really interesting. Number one, people always ask me, hey, how do teams evaluate scouts? How do they fire them? How do they hire them? How do they determine which scouts are good and which ones aren't good? And I thought it was interesting that Ray talked about the fact that he had developed a 2-year evaluation cycle that he was going to implement, and he was going to, I don't know exactly what that was going to look like, but I thought it was interesting that he was going to look at, you know, what the house got to done and who they had brought and who they got up on the table for and all those kind of things, because I think there are 32 ways of doing that. Maybe there aren't 32. Maybe not every team even evaluates them. I think it's also interesting that the narrative that has developed in the media over the last 6 weeks or what have you is the Browns want to go off in this analytics direction, and Ray Farmer didn't want to be a part of that. And Ray Farmer kind of originated that, quite frankly. He was trying to build that into their program. I've talked extensively with Ray about this part, and he it's really, really interesting how involved it was that he was trying to put this together, because he was, you know, for example, with receivers, they had broken down, you know, hours upon hours of film on the college level, and I think they're working on the pro level as well, grading catch radius, more or less. Was the throw here, was it a catchable ball? What about if it was on the other side? Where was the defender at that point? You know, and so they were grading all those things, and their numbers to determine that the best receiver in college football for the 15 drafts was Tyler Lockett, and Amari Cooper was number two. Now, no one had the guts to take Tyler Lockett in the first round, but look what kind of season he had for the Seahawks, you know. And of course, Amari Cooper was outstanding too. And so that's just another illustration of how he was involved in that. Now, the one point I think he made that I thought was really interesting is, at the end of the day, in football at least, everything is subjective. How do you grade an offensive line? You know, that's a very organic, again, is the word that he used. Every play is very organic. You know, how do you grade that the offensive lineman came off the ball and drove his man 3 yards rather than 2 yards? Or, you know, he had a guy stunning. Now, how do you, and he kind of picked up the guy but didn't really. Or maybe he chipped a guy instead of actually whatever. So, and you know, it's just there is a lot of, I don't know, it's not nearly as cut and dried perhaps as maybe a lot of people would like to think it is. And that's true of receivers' routes, and that's true of running backs' decisions, and that's true of quarterbacks' decisions. I mean, I think we all like to think of this as kind of a robotic computer thing, and that's not the case, and it probably never will be. But so there's a place for analytics, and I think Ray's definitely on board with that. But I don't know that football will ever be the kind of maybe cut and dried place that baseball has become. I don't think it translates as easily to baseball, and even baseball has some level of subjectivity that you don't ever hear anyone talking about. Anyway, I thought that was really interesting. I also thought it was interesting that Ray talked about the fact, you know, obviously we're here at the combine, and the combine has become a fixture during the draft process, and maybe the most valued tool, because now people sit all day and watch men run 40 yards. But Ray said that he always valued the All-Star process more than the combine. And that's, you know, we live in an era now when we can watch every practice, I think, that the NFLPA had, and every practice the Senior Bowl had from the comfort of our living room. And we can see all that take place and so that everyone knows that's a valuable part of the evaluation. But I don't think you hear people say, oh, well, the combine's awesome, but really all the work got done at the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Game or even at the Texas First Nation or the college, you know, Gridiron Showcase or whatever. But in his mind, and I think probably in the mind of a fair number of scouts and evaluators and GMs, that is the case. You know, the all-star process is more valuable because, after all, they're playing football at those games. So he had a lot of things that I thought were really interesting, and you know, I could listen to him talk all night. I think a lot of people agreed. It was great to have 100-plus people out there from all walks of the game, but primarily agents who could come in and ask him questions in an open forum. You alluded to the fact that one of the questions kind of got off topic, and that was really frustrating to me because I want them to be able to come and feel like this is a friendly place. I don't want them to have to feel like they have to be on defense. And, you know, I don't want anyone to come in there and play reporter and try to make this a gotcha thing. I'll tell you, Justin, every time I talk to any kind of man of race tenor, at station, the first thing I say is, I'm not looking to make this a gotcha situation. I want it to be a free-flowing time of ideas. And, you know, if he says things that are weird or risky, I'm not going to jump on those. And so I kind of felt bad because for that one moment, I think Ray got a little defensive. I would have gotten a lot of defensive, quite frankly, if I had been in Ray's shoes, but that's the kind of person he is. So anyway, all in all, I thought it was great. You mentioned Ted Gavaya. Ted is great, the assistant general manager for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Outstanding guy. He made a lot of good points. I think a lot of things that we can maybe build on for next year, we can talk about the finer points of the neg list. I think that's valuable. He didn't really touch on that. I think we could talk on the finer points of getting a passport and how you kind of soft sell that to your clients. I mean, that's kind of an important element of this game, especially for the lower tier, the newer agent who has to consider all options for a player. You know, a lot of agents really get upset about the idea of the tryout camps, and I can understand that. They see those as really money factors for the scouts and the GMs of the CFL rather than real opportunities. I think they would push back on that. I know that Ted comes out of his own pocket to run those workouts. The CFL doesn't pay him at all for that. And I do think Ted touched on the vast difference on salaries and budgets and that kind of thing that he has north of the border versus what you see commonplace down here. So I think there's a lot that needs to be gained from that. We also had four of our combine trainers go up and talk about their veteran training packages and what their, you know, the direction they're trying to take and their combine prep programs and a number of other topics. So it was a great night and a lot of fun. And, you know, I think it gave a lot of people a chance to make some pretty awesome contact and hopefully to meet some other people in the room that had shared agendas and shared goals. And maybe, I mean, at the risk of sounding, you know, a little high and mighty or too optimistic, maybe make some friends. That's always the idea, I think, with ITL. At the end of the day, we're trying to put good people with good people and make friends rather than enemies. God knows we all have enemies in this game, but you want to try to reduce that number as much as you can. And hopefully this is a good way to start. So it was a real successful night. I appreciate you being there, Justin. There are a lot of people that were there, you know, a lot of friends, a lot of people that have been colleagues for a long time, all of them clients, and, you know, that's exciting. So we had a good time. I'm glad you had a good time too, Justin. I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people came away with something they could take with them, and that's always very important anytime you come to an event like that. So it was good, and already looking forward to next year. Again, just don't want any of my friends to get fired, so they have to show up at our event next year. But we'll take that a day at a time, I guess.
Yeah, so we've got less than 30 seconds to go. So just, you know, quick, what I wanted to say is that Ray Farmer said the thing that I preach all the time is that the board set here when we get here at Indy, the film is it's all about the film. It's all about the film. It's all about the film. And I think that's one thing agents, players don't get is that, you know, you only can evaluate the ball. And I thought that's one thing mm-hmm. that he brought out, and I wish we could continue to bring that out to the people here that are here in Indy and where that goes, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there and in the marketplace. So, you know, hey, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that I can talk about. We got 10 seconds, so I'm just going to wrap this up. We'll talk next week, Neil.
Sounds great, man. Be safe going home, Justin.
Hey, you too.